The Vox Markets Podcast.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Harpham, Chief Executive Officer of XP Factory. It's XPF ticker. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin.
Yeah, but a few people say, speaking to Richard today, I said, yeah, hopefully. And you've really, you know, a trading update there. And I've got to say, it's always, you know, your figures are always impressive. What's frustrating is the market reaction to it. Of course, you know, you're in leisure and all that stuff. And it's the sentiment in towards that kind of sector has been downbeat, to say the least. But, I mean, you could have done much more than this. So take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Richard.
Well, I suppose the obvious highlight to start off with is the fact that, as we said we would, we've near as doubled in size again this year over last. So delivering £44.5 million of revenue is a step change over last year, where we were just shy of 23. And of course, if you recall, that 23 in and of itself was materially high, almost double the year previously. So that momentum that we've been carrying and that we've been talking about really has continued. But I think excitingly, it's been born of both businesses. It's not like one business is propping up the other. I think both businesses have had absolutely superb years. And if you take those in order, if you look at Escape Hunt, which is, of course, the market leader in escape the room experiences, that business is now 6 or 7 years old, and yet is still delivering 17% like-for-like in the UK. And it's quite remarkable, especially when you consider that those original rooms are still playing the original games. You know, it really is a truly, truly remarkable business. And it's a business that not only delivered 17.5% of like-for-like sales growth, it also delivered 40% EBITDA. So really, really, really strong performance there from Escape Hunt. Sorry, Justin.
No, as I said, they are. It's talk about like for like, and that's the thing. And you know, doing the year 17% up for Escape Hunt, doing Christmas 20% up, and like you say, bigger margins than Boom. But Boom's like for likes also massively impressive. 29% for the year, 50% for Christmas. Like for like.
Yeah, exactly. So Boom obviously is a slightly different story insofar as it's a much younger business. So we do clearly have within that a massive benefit from very young sites maturing and indeed new sites coming on board. And that's what's seen the almost threefold increase in sales for Boom. So, you know, delivering as we did £27.5 million over the year for Boom alone, owner operated, is a marked improvement on last year where we were at circa 9.5. But obviously within that, yes, of course, there is this growth dynamic and new sites and so on. But nonetheless, 29% like-for-like on the sites that were trading in the equivalent period last year is a really, really, really strong performance. And you pick up on it entirely correctly, 50% like-for-like at Christmas. Now, the reason why that's so important is that, of course, you're very aware that in all hospitality businesses, Christmas is a massive part of the year. And so for young businesses like ours that haven't had, at least on the Boom side, too much history, if you like, of trading through Christmas, you would have looked, and indeed a lot of people did look, at our forecast with this massive kind of hockey stick ramp up through the back end of H2. And in fact, it was commented on when we spoke after our H1 results that whilst H1 was very, very strong, we did rely very much on this hockey stick performance to come through, culminating in Christmas, obviously, but being the net effect of young sites maturing, great like-for-like growth, better corporate participation. And it really did have this massive hockey stick forecast. But the point is, we've delivered against it. And so seeing that get delivered, seeing that 50% like-for-like in Boom, seeing, you know, sales numbers the likes of which we couldn't really have imagined a year ago was wonderful. And of course, what that's done is proven that this hockey stick performance that we had forecast was not only deliverable, but deliverable really well for customers. And it feels great.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at the broker note, the 12-month target, double where we are currently in the share price at the 30 beds, and growth continuing. Like I said, for your 15 months, 53.9 million top line, and EBITDA adjusted of 6.1. So, people can read through the release. There's super, it's full of positives. It's hard to see negative. So let's try and address what the concerns people have. So let's say about, you know, cost of living, for example. We've had a nightclub recently, Prism, you know, Recom is the owner of that group, shut down because of cost of living crisis. Worry about students spending. Part of me thought maybe people are going towards social gaming, you know, rather than club nightclubbing. But what's your thoughts on that? And also, the, you know, the national living wage, all that. What are the concerns that are addressed to you that people are worried about? That do you think that there's, you know, they're overblown, really?
Well, I think I'm certainly not about to sit here and suggest that the cost of living is not having a significant impact on a very significant number of people. Of course it is. Mm-hmm. What I would say is that our business is positioned perhaps a little bit differently than some of the others who have been struggling more for a bunch of reasons, which I'll talk about in a moment. But moreover, our customer, our core customer, isn't necessarily the customer who is being most affected by this. So, you know, we've touched on in the trading report just how significant a participation corporate business is for us. And it really does play a very significant part, both on Boom and on Escape Hunt. And actually, corporate spending is really strong. Well, why is that? Well, corporate spending is strong because with hybrid working, when people are coming into offices, businesses are actively looking for things to do that bring their staff together. And that's a really, really big underlying part of our business, not affected by the cost of living crisis. Yeah. If you take our customer base per se, typically our core customer is 25 to 35 years old. Typically, they don't have a mortgage. Typically, they're two incomes without kids. And typically, they're prioritizing quite significant proportions of their income towards the sorts of experiential entertainment which we offer. So it does feel like actually the macros, whilst clearly at one level are a little bit negative on some consumer pursuit, I think for our businesses particularly, we're in quite a good place. Mm. But I suppose more importantly, things that we as a business can control and things that we have attempting to, you know, we've certainly been attempting to control over the last 18 months, is really to obsess about holding customer pricing as much as we can. And I think what we've seen in the industry per se is a lot of businesses that have significant onerous leases, i.e. they signed into a lot of property 10 years ago on prices that would be 50% more expensive than they are now, but they're still paying for that. Mm-hmm. On businesses that don't have anything like the high GPs that we are lucky enough to experience in both businesses, you know, for the obvious reason of game, i.e. it doesn't have variable costs associated with it. And so with that as given, we have obsessed about trying to absorb as much inflationary cost pressure as we can in order to not need to be pushing consumer price. And I think that's really paying some dividends. So, you know, on the Boom side, it would be a really good example where, you know, so many of our competitor sets were pushing through the prices of electricity going up, gas going up, supply chain going up. We really didn't. We just absorbed that. We took the view that particularly electricity pricing, et cetera, was going to be a relatively short-term phenomenon. And indeed, it went up and it's now come back down. We absorbed it. We held pricing. And I think those sorts of things will pay dividends over a while. It, you know, nobody comes back. Once people have made price rises, nobody comes back and push and resets. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we didn't go there in the first place, I think, is really, really positive in the context of, you know, obviously slightly uncertain consumer times. And if you take, another conversation we have regularly is the increase in the national wage. And of course, that is going up quite significantly. It's going up 10%. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that will have an impact on all businesses in this space. But if you think for us, you know, labor is well leveraged in our businesses. You know, if we're at 25% labor, let's say, so 10% increase is 2.5% of sales. Mm-hmm. Well, as we're growing as we are, volume-based growth, absorbing 2.5% in labor, you know, given the operational leverage that we have through really kind of pushing and driving sales, that shouldn't be the end of the world. So is this a massive concern to us? No. Is it obviously something we have to be aware of? Yes, of course. Is it something we have to actively manage? Obviously. But do we expect to be able to cover that through operating leverage? Yes.
Yeah. And what's it like recruiting staff at the moment? Is it easy? Is it hard?
It's got so much easier as the brand has got bigger. So, you know, Escape Hunt's always been fairly easy to recruit for because it's a fairly niche-y experience that if you're the sort of person that's going to enjoy that, you haven't really got any other options. So Escape Hunt's always been really quite straightforward. Boom, obviously, you know, or at least if we go up to the industry bar, let's say, has historically been a little bit harder. But I think now that we have scale, now that we are proving numbers, now we've got some really cool sites that are very vibey and fun, and now that we've demonstrably got a really great culture around the business, some fantastic people, it becomes an awful lot easier to recruit. And so retention is good. You know, we're able to offer in any fast growing business really good career options for people. So hospitality is no longer being seen just as this stopgap that you do between, you know, ending school and starting university on a gap year, or it's the thing you do in the Christmas holidays. Well, hospitality now, and we're leading the charge on this, can very much be a career where you start, you learn the basics, you run up, you end up, you know, becoming an AGM in a site, a GM in a site, you get into area ops and then beyond. And it's a really, really good career now. Yeah. And certainly seeing some benefit from that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you said we do see a lot of, you know, grim stories, and they do sell, of course, about the economy and cost of living crisis, people tightening their belts. So what's your, I mean, you know, you are there on the ground now. We are in January, and a lot of people doing dry January. I said a lot, maybe not that many, but, you know, it's given a bit of press and coverage. But what's your thoughts for this year? How do you see trading this year?
Well, I think, you know, we're really pretty confident about trading for this year, or at the very least, we're going in with, as we often refer to, a very kind of strong sense of cautious optimism. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be attuned to the fact that people, the market is still talking about cost of living. So you have to be attuned to that. You can't just turn off to that. But if you look at some of the macros, I would say some of the macros are quite positive, you know, but for a minor blip yesterday in inflation, I think everybody would agree that the trend is very aggressively downwards. You know, it would be highly improbable that that doesn't get associated with corresponding interest rate decreases as well. That just makes people feel a little bit better in and of themselves. Unemployment is still relatively low. That's a very positive thing from a macro perspective. So I think there are lots of reasons to be relatively positive about, you know, sort of the momentum on consumer. You then look at the fundamentals about cost lines that are truly affecting businesses, and particularly have been affecting hospitality businesses, energy being a key one. Well, energy is trending right down now. So that's very definitely moving away. Businesses like ours have had good levels of rates relief and so on, and this is very helpful. So I think there are lots of reasons to believe that the macro environment is improving and definitely kind of coming in favor. But most importantly, as I say, the things that will, I believe, remain true are that businesses like ours are good for people's mental health. That's the thing that we hear about a lot when we speak with our customers, that, you know, the quote, it is important that we do stuff like this because this is great for our well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, getting out, socializing with friends, being with people, having fun, letting your hair down. This is a good thing to do for mental health. And I think we're really well positioned for that. We've talked about it before. So, you know, we approach the year with a really, you know, grounded sense of optimism. We've got a great estate now of sites that are already trading. We've got new sites in the pipeline, which we're very excited to open. The metrics on both businesses look really attractive. We're carrying a lot of momentum into this coming year. We're still putting a hell of a lot of operational focus on both businesses, particularly on Boom, and we're seeing result and result and result follow on from that, you know, in terms of the leverage that we can see. So we're coming at the year with a degree of optimism.
Yeah. And I said, you know, the state has grown massively over the last 18 months, and obviously that will slow down now, but you're still opening sites. I mean, and I suppose to a certain extent, you get better at that, identifying where you should be and where you want to be.
Yeah, well, I think there's a number of points in that. One is that we take data very seriously. It's not something that we really talk about. It's not something I ever really talk about publicly, but we are obsessed by data. We've got some phenomenally smart people in the business who do nothing other than look at data, test hypotheses, you know, do the quant analysis. And obviously that flows quite dramatically into site selection. So yes, with every additional site we build, we're learning more. Therefore, that base of knowledge improves, and therefore we get a little bit better at selecting where to go next. But moreover, we're now coming back and looking at all the sites that we have opened, and indeed even just the internals, the way that we've built them. What does that feel like for customer flow? What have we got wrong? How could we have improved this? What were the hypotheses that we need to test? How could this flow? You know, what's the marginal rate of diminishing return for every additional game that we put into a Boom site? You know, these are the sorts of things that we obsess about. Yeah. And so what you're going to see this year is us going back and revisiting a number of the Boom sites where we feel that we can optimize the efficiency within them. In some cases, that's born of what I would describe to a bit of a first world problem. Over Christmas, we saw some numbers that we never expected to see in certain sites, and that actually causes us a capacity problem. So how do we create additional capacity within these sites? That's a great problem to have, but it will cause us to go back. In other sites, we think we can get better utilization now that we've observed the customer flows. And so what does that mean in terms of layout? What can we change? What should we do? This analysis we do on the diminishing returns on incremental gains better informs what you should put where, how you do it, when you do it, why you do it. So all these things together, I think, lead us they nudge us further and further and further down that line of just getting better at site selection, better at building, better at hitting the ground running. And it's quite exciting.
Yeah. And I suppose with that kind of data, that internal analysis, helps, because the overall environment, competitive socialized gaming, and it's getting busier, is it, as a market, but that proves a demand out there. But what's your thoughts on competitors?
Well, I really enjoy the fact that there are competitors there. If you back yourself, you back your team, then you'd back yourself to go up against any competitor that comes. And actually, it can be a really positive thing if we can obsess about the experience and, hopefully do a little bit better than a lot of the competitors. Then that feels like really good news to me. But moreover, if you have new entrants into a market, it is on average because the market exists and is growing and is a hot place to play. So that feels like a really good thing for businesses like ours. That feels like, more of a shift away from traditional leisure into our types of experiences. And that can only be good news.
Yeah. Okay. So over the next 12 months, what can sort of investors expect? Is anything you're looking at that's a bit different, exciting, anything new?
I'm not sure there's anything new particularly. I think we've got a good formula, and I think we're going to continue to refine it. So it'll be definitely an evolution of the way that we deliver. We're not looking to do anything fundamentally different, but we're definitely looking to refine at the margin as much as we can. As I say, we still think, particularly on the boom side, that there is more operational leverage to come. We like to do that in a very measured way so that you don't make kind of shock changes to teams, but that will continue to evolve over the next 12 months. We're in a wonderful position now where we're able to build new sites but fund them organically. So we will continue to do that. You picked up on the fact that, of course, the growth won't be as aggressive as the 20-odd sites that we built a year ago. But nonetheless, we will be looking to do new sites both on the escape hunt side and on the boom side. Mm-hmm. And I think most excitingly, we're going to be able to continue to make more of the very strong estate that we've already got. And all of us are looking forward to seeing where that can end.
Yeah. Well, Richard, well done on the figures there. So you and the team, another, fantastic set. And it's just, like I said, the market at the moment is dreadful. Everyone seems to be worrying, but sometimes that's the best time to invest, I suppose. But like I said, you keep putting these figures out and the market can't ignore it. So thanks for that, Richard.
At some point, you hope that, pricing better aligns to fundamentals. You have to believe that.
Yeah, exactly. Marvelous stuff. Cheers, Rich. Speak soon.
Thanks so much. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.